You're listening to a podcast from 702.
And of course, to London we go to get the world view from the British capital. We're joined by Adam Gilchrist. Adam, good morning to you on this rather wet Monday morning on this side of the world. Now, a woman has died from this nerve agent poisoning.
Yeah, morning, Bongani. Yeah, a murder investigation, therefore, has begun because this poor woman, Dawn Sturgis, died from contact of some kind with the nerve agent Novichok, the same substance used to attack the Skripals, the former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia, back in March. Against the odds, the Skripals survived. But this woman, 44-year-old Dawn Sturgis, hasn't been so lucky. She perished in hospital yesterday. Her partner, Charlie Rowley, by the way, remains critically ill in the same hospital, but also the same hospital where the Skripals had been, too. All sorts of theories, but frankly, all sorts of questions. So at this stage, we don't know, where did Dawn Sturgis and Charlie Rowley come across the same Novichok substance? Where do they find it? How do they find it? Where is it now? Is it in the same place? Is it a tiny trace in a container of some sort that was discarded after the original attack? And the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, declared the Salisbury area open for business. No one should be put off visiting. They sound like hollow words, frankly.
Yeah, I'm not. The stuff. Yeah, I'm not convinced. Yeah. I won't be going to Salisbury anytime soon, I can tell you that much. Now, Japan's flood crisis, of course, record rainfall, leading to dozens of people dying.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, the kind of rain they've had, particularly in western Japan, but the kind of rainfall they've had is three times the usual rainfall for the whole of July in 3 days. It's an awful lot of rain. And as a result, simply rivers couldn't cope and have burst their banks. There'd be mudslides and landslides and all sorts of problems with houses getting crushed and so forth. At this stage, the death toll is thought to be above 100. But the Japan Times newspaper is also reporting this morning that 50 other people are missing at least. Plus, rescuers are finding it difficult to get to this situation because of the floods and the mud and so forth. The waters may be beginning to recede slowly, but again, now there's a shortage of bottled water, roads are blocked, electricity is in short supply, as it were. Most of the deaths, by the way, in and around Hiroshima. So Japan's got a real problem with this because they're not even close to a clear-up operation yet.
All right, and the story we've been chatting about for a while now, this Thai cave rescue. So they're staggering the rescue for the 12 boys. Of course, some already have been rescued. I mean, the drama just continues.
Doesn't it? And the thing is that you look at the kind of map, you've probably seen some like myself, where you see the cave as represented in what they have to go through. And you think, that is not easy. In fact, at one stage, I think, of this escape, you actually can't have a scuba tank on your back. You have to take it off. Even for an experienced diver in claustrophobic, dark enclosures, having to take your kit off to swim a bit further. For boys who are not experienced swimmers, if they can swim at all, certainly none of them are divers. That's scary stuff. And so four boys, we know, have been rescued so far. Eight and their football coach are still in there, and they are working as we speak to get them out, and ambulances have gathered at the entrance to the caves. It's still that race against time because of the forecast for more torrential rain and the fact that where they are could well get flooded. So getting those boys out remains a really, really tough task and still very cinematic somehow. Let's hope it's a happy ending, though.
Yeah, we'll end off on a cheerful note, certainly for you lot. No excitement, no overstating the excitement in England right now. Passion, passion, passion.
Oh, it's all over the place, yeah. Wild celebrations broke out. I have to say, where I was quite sedate and so forth, but where my son was in East London, I don't know, people jumping on buses. I say jumping on double-decker buses and hammering and the traffic ground to a standstill in some parts. People were throwing beer over each other, given our inflated beer prices at the moment. That in itself is quite extraordinary. You could argue they're slightly less delirious in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. But in England, 20 million of us watched England outplay Sweden. 24 million have watched the game against Colombia. Goodness knows how many will watch on Wednesday for the semi-final against Croatia. England's first appearance in a Football World Cup semi-final for 28 years. And, of course, we haven't been in a final for 52 years.
Now, I laughed at you a few weeks ago, but what's the famous slogan right now? It's coming?
Yeah. Home.
That's coming home. All right. Adam Gilchrist there on the line from the UK. Now, every day on the Emirates Worldview, we ask you to send us a question on any world topic you want to know more about. And today's question comes from Tembang Kabinde, who wanted to know who appoints the judges of the ICC. And to get the answer, we spoke to Nicole Fritz, who is, of course, the CEO of Freedom Under Law.
Judicial candidates are initially nominated by the ICC's Assembly of State Parties. That's the body comprising representatives of all the states that are members of the ICC. Candidates must have the qualifications that would make them fit to be judges in their home country. The election process results in at least 9 judges being elected with expertise related to criminal law and procedure, and at least 5 judges having expertise related to international law. The Assembly of State Parties must also take into account representativity of the principled legal systems of the world, equitable geographical representation, and a fair representation of male and female judges. The judges are elected by secret ballot, and the candidates with the highest number of votes win if they also have 2/3 majority of state votes.
All right, a great answer there from Nicole Fritz from Freedom Under Law. Congratulations to Tembang Kabinde for having your Emirates Worldview question answered. You've won R1,000 courtesy of Emirates. Fly Emirates first class and business class to experience a new level of comfort.
If you have a question on an interesting topic for Emirates Worldview, send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072 702 1702 or hashtag Emirates Worldview on Twitter. There's more Emirates Worldview on 702.co.za.
Alex, glad I caught you. Listen, I have big news. You got the promotion.
Sarah, I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. You deserve it. It does involve a lot of traveling, but don't worry. The office is incredible. Fully reclining seat, Wi-Fi, built-in bar.
That's amazing. Where is it?
On board Emirates Business Class, the best office in the sky.
With flatbed seats and a host of features, Emirates Business Class is so much more than just business. Fly Emirates. Experience a new level of comfort.